Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1141. Let's go to the corkboard, the ID10T community corkboard, for the goings-on of the ID10T community, which may be you if you're listening to the podcast. This is from Jack, who writes, I just want to let you know that I made a thing about 5 years ago, and it's still a thing. I host SciFlix, a free community film screening once a month through the academic year, where we show a feature film, play a Kahoot trivia game for prizes, and have a panel discussion with professional scientists about topics inspired by the films. Ooh, what a great idea. For anyone in the Kansas City area, we can be found at edwardscampus.ku.edu.sciflix, SCIFLIX, and hope to see you there at the next KU Edwards Campus SciFlix. Great job. What a fun idea to have scientists come on and talk about topics inspired by the films. Really cool idea. I wish I'd had that when I was in college. Dang it. Back in the 1900s, we didn't have such things. It's great work, Jack. Events at ID10T.com for anyone else who has a thing they want to share. This episode is Karen David, who is awesome. Karen plays Grace on Fear the Walking Dead. Karen's also been on, was on Once Upon a Time and Gallivant and Barry. And so she has fantastic credits. We've gotten to be friends through the course of her being on the show. And she did Talking Dead a bunch of times, was just on actually, posting this podcast almost a week ago. And Karen's just amazing. She's an incredible singer-songwriter and also actress and producer, and she's and so nice, and an interior designer. We have bonded a lot and bond a lot on this podcast over cool wallpapers, and just so fun and funny and great. So it was an absolute pleasure to have her on. The mid-season finale of Fear the Walking Dead is Sunday, December 5th. It'll be taking a break for the holidays and then back next year. So, catch that if you can. Catch up if you want to watch it as it airs on television, which really is a thing that I feel like like an old person when I talk about. You could watch it when it's on, when it airs. What's air? Well, that's when the network puts it on. What? No, I can't just watch it whenever I want. Well, you can, but you also could just watch it at this designated time. Well, I'm not going to. I like to watch things whenever I want. Okay, fine. I'm old. Fear the Walking Dead has just a really incredible arc this season if you're not watching it. And Karen's really great on the show, too. So watch that December 5th, Sunday. And listen now to the ID10T podcast number 1141. With Karen David as we roll the thing.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Karen David.
Hold on, let me put it. Hello, hello. Oh my gosh, it's so funny. I was all prepared, and then literally, just as I was about to sign in, my internet's gone down. So I'm using my phone's internet, so hopefully that's okay.
I mean, I can hear you fine. The picture's clear. Like, everything's good.
Okay, good. Because this is off my phone now, internet. Because I was like, I don't know what's going on. I rebooted. And then nothing's happening, and I'm like, anyway.
By the way, you're basically illustrating what it was like to do Talking Dead during the entire pandemic, where it's like we'd have, like, every week without fail, like, at least one person on the panel would, like, my internet's down. We had Norman on once literally during an electrical storm in Georgia, and, like, lightning hit, and everything in his house just went dead for, like, 15 minutes. We were like, is that it? Do we...
Hi! Oh my gosh! Look at your backdrop. I love it.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is.
I love it.
This is kind of our room with a lot of our collectible stuff. And if I were to sort of, if you were to look around the room, you could sort of see like, oh, there's there's like the horror movie props are Lydia's.
That's so great.
Like the Disney stuff and the other stuff are mine.
You can see there's a Dalek in the background there.
I love that you have a Dalek.
We've got some gremlins up there you can see in front of the TV. Yeah. So, you know.
Oh, it's so good to see you. And congrats on impending fatherhood.
I mean, I know it's crazy because we realize, like, oh my God, she's entering the third trimester. Like, we're in the beginning of the, like, the almost the at the end of it. Like, she's in February, and that's 3 months. So it's just gone like that.
Yeah, it's so crazy. I'm so excited for you both.
We're very excited too. Like, I don't know. It's been really incredible, and also there isn't really much for us to do. Like, we didn't really have plans to go, like, travel, you know. So it's like we feel like we were probably going to be at home, and so this is just the perfect time to, like, now we're just fostering this little person and you know, taking care.
Yeah. I'm so excited. I'm so excited for you.
Thank you. Yeah. I was excited to talk to you because we've never really gotten to talk at length about our shared love of wallpaper and house renovation. I feel like every time you pop up on Talking Dead, there's some new, like, that's even a cool wallpaper in your background. There's always some cool wallpaper, and I'm like, shit, I really want to talk about this, but I know we need to talk about Fear the Walking Dead. We need to talk about, you know, like, people don't watch Talking Dead to hear us talk about wallpapers, but now we are free to do that. So
we can. And it's funny because if I showed you, I have to show you pictures because the house in LA is down to the studs, and it's so exciting, but it's absolutely nerve-wracking at the same time because I'm just like, oh my God, what have I done? And wow. I got to pay for all of this. Like, my husband and I were like, oh my gosh, you know. So and that wallpaper is all gone. But I did, I kept that link that you gave me of that company that can scan it. So I made sure I still have clippings and everything of it left over. So to see if we can maybe replicate it again.
Well, it's funny that you say that because we just found... We're renovating something, and we just found, like, we're, you know, like kind of making the nursery for the baby. So we were renovating the bathroom that was attached to that, and there was the ceiling was a little low. And when they pulled out the low ceiling, they uncovered this strip of, like, original 100-year-old wallpaper that's on plaster. Like, there's no way to even really pull it off. So I don't know if I can send you images.
Oh, this could be, I feel like this is something out of Escape to the Chateau, where she finds these you know, hidden gems.
Well, it's funny you say that because I just had them on the podcast a week ago.
Oh, you did?
And I told her the exact same story, and she was like, oh, you know, you can get that scan and you can have someone recreate it, and that's what I do. So
I love them so much.
Are you able to open the wallpaper? Can you see it? If you go in the chat of Zoom.
Yeah, that's really nice.
Isn't that cool?
That is gorgeous.
It's just a strip of it, and it's not in great shape, but I took a lot of close-up photos of it to see if we can scan it and maybe put it back or put it in another room or something, just so that we have some cataloging of, because there's almost no trace of what that original house was, because it had been renovated endlessly over the years. So it's just,
I mean, that is beautiful. That is beautiful.
So your house is down to the studs now. Are you restoring it? Are you modernizing? Like, what's your plan?
We're sort of modernizing it a bit because it's 1941.
Okay.
It's a traditional ranch house. Kind of colonial style. I love the house so much because it reminded me of being back home in England, and I could immediately picture planting wisteria the minute that we walked in the front. So I knew it was going to be a very European home, like it had all the bones for it. But, you know, like a lot of the homes that are much older, the closets are very humble and very small. people were much more organized then, I feel, and had a lot less clutter back then. So the closets are very small, and there's like two, three different entrances into the main room, and you don't need that. It's like these little compartmentalized hallways, and it's like, no, we wanted to open it up a bit. Although I have kept the formal dining room, because I do like a formal dining room. So we've kept that wall up, but everything else is opened up. And there was this weird sort of bar in the middle of the room, just because. And we don't, I mean, look, it's nice to have a bar, but planted right in the middle of the family room and kitchen just felt completely odd. So I was so excited when they knocked that down. So we're opening everything up, and it's going to become a very kind of like, I've been looking on Instagram. The algorithms have been, oh my God, so dangerous, but have been such a wealth of inspiration, because I'm getting all my ideas from different magazines or different interior designers. So I'm just kind of making this vision board saying, I'll take that from there. I'll put that there. That's going to be the pantry look. That's going to be the laundry room look. And so we're kind of doing all this, and it's a lot of fun. And I got to keep reminding myself that as we write the checks out, thinking, gulp, oh my God, how much? Gulp, what? It's,
well, but also keep in mind that it's not like it's not money that's going away. It's money that you're investing into the appreciation of the property, and also like it's so like you can half justify it as like an investment expense, but then also I think the other half is like it's like art. You're investing. It's an artistic expense. It's an artistic creative expense too. So you're creating this piece of art that will not only appreciate in value, but also will dramatically increase the quality of your creative happiness, every day that you live in it.
And that's so important. My mom said that, my mom always told me right from when I was a struggling, broke drama college graduate, she said, doesn't matter how big or small the place is, it's creating sanctuary. You have to make sure that you're happy at home first. And she said, if you're happy at home first, then everything else just falls into place. And she was so right. So, you know, this is our forever home, kind of. So we're trying to just bring a bit of our influences of, you know, my husband's Swedish, so Scandinavian kind of meets, trying to find a happy medium between Scandinavian and British colonial with my Asian roots too. So it's fun. It's a lot of fun, and it's a passion project. And like you said, you just have to enjoy each process. But I think it's just nerve-wracking when you see it completely naked down to the studs. You're like, oh my gosh.
I mean, it's we're going through that now, and it is it can be alarming, because you're like, oh my God, I hope it comes together. But the thing that I like about it is that everything's kind of out in the open. You know what's in the walls. Like, to me, that's the big scary part, is opening up the walls, because you never know if there's going to be like asbestos or a skeleton, or like you don't know what's in, or is it gold coins, you know? But, or if it's like, oh, we want to do this, and they go, oh, well, we found out you can't because there's plumbing that runs through here, there's electrical, and if you want to do that, you're going to have to move all that. So it is that sort of big reveal of like, can we even do the thing we want to do based on like what's in the walls or how they're configured? And so, but once it's all open, then it's like, ah, here we go. Now it's time to like really, the creation process really starts to take root at that point.
Oh yeah. And like you guys, as you know, I love my wallpaper. So I've been having so much fun on different sites, just kind of looking at various wallpapers and how, I mean, wallpaper today, they have upped their game. It is so far away from like, you know, God bless my Nana, but you know, my grandmother, but it's a long ways away from grandma wallpaper, you know, back in the day. It's next level. It's very artistic. You can get murals, you can do all sorts. And I find like being, especially when you're doing a show like Fear and you're constantly in this apocalyptic backdrop, coming home and creating sanctuary and the comforts of sanctuary, you appreciate so much, and you really value being able to take a shower or soaking in a tub or something.
It's a pleasant wallpaper to look at. Like
exactly. Anything that makes me smile, because as you know, with season 6 and season 7, you know, Grace's journey, it's been really dark. So to find that yin and yang and coming home and having some flowers or having nice wallpaper in the background, it just, that's where I come up for air and find my light.
You know, I constantly try to put myself in the headspace of like, what was going on in the 70s? Like what sort of like counter aesthetic movement was happening with some of the carpets and the wallpapers? Because, you know, we tend to like the stuff that's a little more either Victorian or just, or in general, just sort of late 19th century, the kind of the William Morris, the arts and crafts movement, the kind of like the Eastlake, you know, like the really intricate, doorknobs or the intricate hinges, where they really sort of focused on the intricate aesthetic quality and the real beauty and the artiness of it. And it's sort of like you see it like that kind of goes all the way up until like the 40s, and then the 50s, it starts to get a little more mod. You get that kind of mid-century, and the 60s and the 70s, they were kind of just like, fuck everything, you know, like lime green, you know, like this weird, you know. And it's like, okay, that must have been a reaction, but I'm glad. And then the 80s was just like, what the fuck? Do you know, how much like neon did we need? But but now I feel like we've sort of come back around, and we have all this, it's all kind of an art box to pick and choose from, yes, to sort of, to kind of meld some of them together.
It's timeless. I feel like it's, because don't get me wrong, we all love our inner neon, you know, color blocking and
white
color.
In moderation.
Yeah, in moderation. But it's true. I remember when I was like, I don't know, when I was in my teens, I didn't really appreciate architecture, culture, history, and all that. And the more I've traveled, I take so much inspiration even from the hotels or the B&Bs that I stay in, you know, all over. And there's so much inspiration wherever we go. It could be a bar or a restaurant, or it could be like a you know, like I said, the hotel or the B&B. But I kind of take the inspiration from all these places. But I like nostalgia too. And I'm finding more and more people are going back to more nostalgic things that reminds them of their childhood growing up, and either going to grandma's house where, you know, it was all about that floral, maybe floral detailed ornate wallpaper, but they've kind of modernized it now where it kind of fits in. So it's kind of a happy medium where it's too, right, it's not too, you know, canary yellow, you know, powder blue, right, floral, but it's, there's some beautiful, beautiful murals and all that. So it's trying, kind of tapping into a bit of nostalgia and something that's timeless that will kind of never go out of style, not too faddy. So, And then I'll use like a pop of color with a sofa or something, and, you know, brighten it up. But
I can't wait until you're, I would love to see what you do.
Yes, you're going to come over.
When it's done.
If I show you, this is what I warned you about. I can talk about home decor till the cows come home.
Oh my God. And I feel like you should also, if you don't know her, you should definitely meet Christina Hendricks, who is also like an amazing like designer and does really cool stuff.
Oh, I just get excited by all that. I just ordered my bathtub because I told my husband how, especially like I said, being in the apocalypse, when you work our crazy hours or wearing those hazmat suits in that that fucking awful heat. Okay? I said it. It's miserable. I mean, I'm grateful because I love my job. I love my TV family, but it is fucking awful. And it's
still
so
200
hot.
Degrees in a hazmat suit
and
when you're
in a hazmat suit. And I told him, I said, love, I am getting my tub. I told him, I said, I'm getting my tub. I don't care what you say. I'm getting my tub. So I ordered a catchpole and rye French bateau nickel tub.
Oh, wow.
And it is. I'm so excited. I'm trying to find the pictures. I'm so crazy excited about this. And I know it's something that you guys will probably love too, but a tub is everything. So I've got that. And then we got he wanted his La Cornue stove. So we got that. So I can't wait till it all comes in, but you guys have to come over.
I would love to see, I'd love to see it. Like we do like a house exchange where it's like, oh, and we can just, cause it's so fun when you do it to take people around and go, oh, and then we did this to tie this into this, And for people who aren't into that stuff, they'd be like, why are you fucking showing me this? If you're into it, you really are like, oh my God, what a cool idea. You know, like what a fun way to kind of express that.
Oh my God. I'm so excited. No, you guys will have to come over.
Speaking of hotels, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but there's a really stunning hotel in Chicago called that's the Chicago Athletic Association. And it was an old athletic club, like a century plus old athletic club that was converted into a hotel. And they basically wove in all of the athletic club stuff that has that, like turn of the century look. And it looks, the lobby of that place is like mind blowing to me, but it's called the Chicago Athletic Association. It's one of the coolest looking hotels I've ever seen or stayed in. And I think you would love it.
Okay. I got to make a note of that.
Oh, look at that tub. Oh yeah, that's fancy AF as kids. That's really cool. I mean, it's just like those little sanctuary pieces and sort of remembering that your home. And again, it's not even like you don't even have to spend money to make like a ton of money to make your place an expression of your who you are and what you want, but when you really take the time to do it, you're right. Whatever is going on in your day, when you come home, you just sort of feel like, okay, at least, the world may feel chaotic, but at least I feel, peaceful in this little space.
Yeah. And it's just down to the little things too. Like I've got my mugs, I'm having my cup of tea. Good vibes only. That makes me happy. I saw your Jabba the Hutt mug and all of that. And I was Star Wars. I was just like, oh my gosh, that makes me smile so much. It's little things like that. I find it more interesting where now I'm giving myself like an HGTV task where I can like decorate on a budget,
Yeah.
And I find that much more exciting. I like flip or flop. I like flea market flip, all of that where you go thrifting. Mo Collins and I, we talk endlessly about trying to find some antiques and all of that and refurbish. And it's just fun.
It forces you to be more creative. And also like I think people tend to get lazier when they can just throw money at something because it's like, just that, and it's like, and the expensive stuff is often really not the best stuff. Like the best stuff has story and the most interesting things have been around a while and they've kind of been lived with and they feel, like when I think about all the stuff that we've collected, almost everything we have is like an antique or came from a secondhand store or and it's like, we're curating this stuff in time. And then hopefully, like long after we're gone, it'll just sort of fan back out into the world and become like a part of someone else's story and we'll have passed it down to them. So it's fun when you think about it that way.
There's a story behind each piece when you curate like that. I'm such an I'm an emotional director, sort of in designing mode. I'm very emotional. I wear my heart on my sleeve. So it's like even before we knocked down the walls, before demo day, I literally hugged the walls. I was like talking to the walls in the house saying, I love you. It's not that I don't love you. I do love you. But we're just going to update you a little bit with a little makeover. But I'm sending you good energy. Like it's so important. Like I'm sure when I was so excited when we went to look to buy a house hunting, and you just know when you walk in into a house, whether it needs a makeover or whatever, you just know if there's good energy. And if there is a good energy circulating in that house, you just know it's the one. And our house, it was that. I literally like had this big cheesy grin on my face and my heart was smiling so much. And I said, well, this feels like home. So I was very teary too when I was hugging the walls. My mom said, yeah, bless the house, thank the house, very Marie Kondo. so I was doing that and I was like, I hope you're strong. I know you're strong. And as if I'm talking to a human, like, you know, everything's going to be okay. There's not going to be any issues. Like, all of that, like, fingers crossed. And yeah, just kind of having a pep talk with the house before demo day.
I think that's really nice, because there's one school of thought that says, like, oh, you should never let the other agent hear that you love this. It's like, you know what we mean is that it could be someone's home. I don't, you know, because, you know, because once they find out, like, you're attached to it, like, it's all over. But I think the opposite, because I think if a house is special, the person who's selling it wants to know that it's going to be loved and cared for if it was special to them in any way. And I think that's important. I think someone would be willing, in a lot of cases, if there were multiple offers, to sell for less money to someone who will cherish the house or that it's meaningful to, rather than not necessarily always going to whoever the highest bidder is, if that person seems emotionally detached, you know, because, like, your house is your, it's like your spirit home. So it's like you want to make sure that it is also cared for, and that someone isn't just going to come in and, you know, wreck it.
Yeah. And that's exactly what happened with us. We had lost out on not so many, but we were a bit soul destroyed after losing out on 5 homes. And Mom kept saying to me, those homes weren't meant to be yours. And when we saw this house, I just knew. I came outside and my mom was with me. My husband was in England, so he was literally on FaceTime. And he said, if the house looks anything like the photos and you're happy, let's do it. And we just told our estate agent, you bounce. We said, you know, we don't want to play any games. We were the first ones to see it. Let's just go in, open heart. Like, I want them to know that I just love it, and it's home. So I'm glad we did, because that's exactly, they took our offer over someone else who was much higher. Yeah. But it was so important to them, because they'd been living in the house for 25 years, that, you know, that love and that legacy that they had created would carry on in the house. So I'm very grateful, because they could have easily gone for the higher bid.
Well, I would tell people sometimes, like, hey, if there's a house that you love, write the owner a letter and tell them what it means to you, so that they understand, you know, and even just the act of, I mean, the act of putting pen to paper now at all is unbelievable.
Like, most people, it means so much.
I feel like I've forgotten how to handwrite, but it is meaningful, and it does say to them, like, oh, they took the time to express, you know, in this very antiquated way of using a pen and paper, that the house is meaningful to them, and that really does make a difference. That really will make a difference.
It did. I wrote a letter, because I kind of put myself in their shoes. Well, if someone was buying my house, who would I want to go for and choose? And I know a letter would go a long way. So told them all about us, and it worked. It really worked. Our estate agent said he was going to use that as a template for the rest of his clients, you know, to pull at the heartstrings and all of that. But that's another thing. I'm digressing a little, but the art of letter writing, that, again, nostalgic and something that you appreciate so much. Garrett, when he was finishing up on the show, he sent all of us during the pandemic this beautifully typed, like, on a typewriter, like, so Garrett's such a class act, sent this beautifully typed letter to each of us. And I, because we weren't expecting it, I literally bawled my eyes out, because I can't remember the last time that I received, like you said, whether it's handwritten or on a typewriter, the nostalgia of it. And it was so meaningful and just meant so much. And I told him, I said, well, you know, I'm going to frame this. I said, this is so lovely. It's such a beautiful letter. You know, I have to frame it. But it's those little things in life that truly bring joy, and that, you know, just makes you smile and gives you life, gives you energy.
God, it's so easy to forget to do that. So it's so easy to forget that you can do that stuff sometimes, because we're just moving so fast, and it's like, it's so convenient to just, like, send someone a text, okay, see ya, you know, or later, hey, miss you, you know.
Yeah.
But to realize, like, oh yeah, you actually can just take a little bit of time, that even now more than ever, that means a lot because everyone really kind of collectively understands that we're all just so consumed with busyness all the time and whatever and trying to stay afloat that, you know, to really just hit the brakes and just take the time to, it's a really big deal. And again, it sort of strengthens those, like so many of our relationships became digital, you know, like they became these sort of two-dimensional relationships in the last like year and a half. And I feel like we have to make the concerted effort to get back to IRL, you mm-hmm. know, like interactions and expressions. And it's like, it is a little bit of a muscle that I think that we forgot. I can't tell you how many times we've hung out with people and they just go, I'm so sorry. I have to remember how to do this. And it's like, it's totally fine. Like we're all in the same boat, of course, you know, like no worries.
I know. I think the first person I hugged after being initially in quarantine and all that, like, well, just, you know, staying at home on lockdown, was Lenny. And it was when we were filming this back in season six, when Grace meets up with Morgan finally. And she gives him a hug. And when they said cut, I told Lenny, I said, can you just, let's just stay here for a second longer. You're the first person I'm hugging other than my husband and my dog. And this is really lovely. And it's like you said, those little things that just mean so much. All of a sudden, just to be able to hug someone, mask and all, whatever, it was just so lovely. But it did make me focus my energies on those subtle things. So as soon as like Garrett sent me that letter, I said, well, I have to write a letter back. And then I said, well, do I text him and tell him I'm writing a letter back? And I'm like, no, back in the day, you didn't. You just got the pen and you got your nice stationery out. So it was this lovely ritual. I got my favorite stationery. I'm a sucker for stationery. So I got my stationery out. I got my nice fountain ink pen. And then I wrote, and I was horrified by my chicken scratch handwriting. Because like,
you got to practice that. Yeah, I forgot that too.
The muscle, trying to move that. And I then sealed it, but I used my thing, and I'm curious to know what your thing is. My thing is that I get those wax stamps with my initials and the seal.
Oh, that's cool.
And yeah. I love it. And I light it up and I let the wax drip and then I seal it. And I thought, okay, that feels really nice, that ritual. And I sent the letter off to Garrett.
Oh, that's so nice. But then, you know, the letters though, we don't really, you know, unless you send it like a form of registered mail where you know that the other person received it, sometimes you could just send something like, did they ever get that? I never heard anything. Is that I don't know. I hope they got that.
I know.
Hey, Garrett, did you get anything in the mail? Just wondering if you checked your mail.
He probably said it's not as eloquent as what I did. I said nothing is as eloquent as what you did on your.
Well, I'll give you some points for the wax seal. I mean, but I don't know, the handwriting could use a little bit of work.
Yes. Yeah, because then that's another thing. It's like, is he going to understand my chicken scratch handwriting? I'm like, oh my gosh. Anyway.
You know, just as a joke, it would be really funny if you had gotten it exact, just, you know, just went to Kinko's or whatever, FedEx office or whatever it's called now, and got an exact copy of Garrett's letter, but then like graded it like a teacher with a red pen and sent it back to him, been like, good effort, B minus, you know, whatever. Just like this really heartfelt note.
You're giving me ideas now.
You know, what is this? Who is this referring to? I don't know. You know, like, good efforts. Yeah.
I should totally do that.
See after class.
Do you have a personalized thing that you do?
Oh gosh, you know, Lydia does. Lydia's amazing with Lydia. Lydia's the best. Like she will, you know, she would have these like nights where like friends would come over and they'd watch like some silly Christmas movie or something, and she's a basket maker, so she will assemble like a little bucket or a little basket of stuff themed around a thing, whatever it is, and just put like four or five or six things in there. And then everyone gets a little basket or a little bucket or something. And, you know, I've said, Lydia, your blessing and your curse is that you're so good at this, that it's a blessing, but the curse is that I get lazier because I can't do a better job than you. So I'm just always going to rely on the fact that you're so good at it, you know? So it's, yeah, I hate to say it, that it's, I'm not sure I have like a really good one, but my wife is like stellar with that kind of stuff.
But it, there's so much joy in doing those things and in making, you know, when you make something, there's so much joy in that. I become more and more appreciative and soppy, incredibly soppy when, you know, even if my husband writes me a card, fancy that, a card, he wrote it. Or if I, like Garrett's letter, or, you know, Mo, she paints and she'll give something like a little painting of hers, or, you know, just little things when they create on their own. It's an investment of their time, and knowing that, you just, I find now as each year goes by, I end up getting so teary every time I see something that's so simple, but then just means so much, you know?
All right. So I did. Okay. This is a light pat on the back, a very light pat on the back, but we had our 5-year wedding anniversary this year, and we had gone to, and whenever she has a birthday or we have an anniversary or whatever, I do handwrite like a big thing. And so I saved, I got these, we went to Japan for our honeymoon, and I have these postcards from this really incredible, this place is called Ogimachi Village, and it's where they have, you know, like so many generations of families passed down these thatched roof huts. It's a little valley of these incredible thatched roof homes that are just like so many centuries old. And so I had this pack of like these gorgeous postcards from there. And so I wrote her the anniversary card on a postcard from this Ogimachi village from our honeymoon. Mm-hmm. So I felt like that was like, I was a little smug about it as I was writing it. I was like, oh, you've done it this time, my friend. Like I felt really good about it, and it went over great. I'm not, you know, like it, but those are the kind of things I like, those little keepsakes. I like, you know, like pulling something out of the history of our relationship and then representing it, like, oh, remember this thing, you know, like now it's a part of our, you know, like now it's an antiquity from our story and now here it is, you know. So I like that kind of stuff.
I have a trinket box. It's just like a box where I just put either letters or little, it could be concert tickets or whatever, of anything that's going to take me back to a very sweet memory. I'll have it in this box. And I think during the pandemic, especially when we had tons of times on our hands when we were on lockdown, it was really important for me to find something that could make me smile and remind me of my gratitude too, even through the tough times. And I pulled that trinket box out and it just took me back on memory lane, and I was so happy. And I felt this lightness, which, you know, we all kind of need during the beginnings of this pandemic, of just trying to find that light. And that certainly brought so much joy. I found all my husband's little love notes and everything. I was actually like going, oh, this is so cheesy, but so sweet. And this is so great.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah. I think it's great because it, you know, when you're young, it's easy to be like, ah, you know, I don't know. It's easy to be too cool, you know, but I think when you, and I don't mean everyone who's young is like that, but I think like some people, it's just easy to kind of take that stuff for granted because you're just so like, you're so thinking about the future when you're young. You're so thinking about like what you're going to do next that it's, I feel like it can be difficult to be present sometimes when you're young because you don't want to be in the present. You want to get to a place. You want to figure out who you are, establish yourself and whatever. And so, but then if you start to get a little older, you're like, ah, but we could just slow down. So yeah. Those moments, I don't know. I had this idea. I think it's probably okay to talk about on the podcast because I don't know if Lydia will catch wind of it, but, I thought it might be kind of interesting, and maybe I should do this for the baby, or maybe I should do this for both of them, is like maybe at the start of the new year or start on our birthday, get a journal and then just every day like write one thing that it's like, oh, here's something that I was really grateful for, you know, this that involved you on this day. oh, you know, you said this thing that was real that I really liked, or you did this, or we had this dinner, or this happened, or that, and then you don't tell them, and then you present it to them a year later, so they have an entire year. And then, you know, if that person's just kind of feeling, having a weird day, they can just kind of go through and just see nothing but, like, just an outpouring, like a calendar year of love.
Yeah. That's, brownie points for you. That's a brilliant idea.
Well, I haven't done it yet. I don't get any points yet. This is just an idea. I don't want to take the points yet for just saying that I might do it. But that's something that I was thinking might be kind of cool.
That would be so wonderful, especially when your baby is growing up and they look back, then they have this momentum. It's just, it's things like that that matter most. I have this, you know, they have these 5-year journals, and I get it thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to do this. But what was really good about this 5-year journal was that it's, you only write a few lines, like you said. Yeah. And even though I haven't, like some years I've skipped or what, I go back to it because I do write in it from time to time. And then on that day, 2 years ago, I wrote something and I'm like, oh, wow. Oh, yeah. That's great. You know, I remember that. And it's like, it's what you said. It's we get so busy that we forget. And it's something, practicing being present is something I've had to do every day a lot. I mean, certainly in my 20s, I didn't really think about it. I remember my parents gave me Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now. Right. And I was like, oh, I don't know, 22, 23 when I got it. And I didn't understand it. It was all crap. I was like, oh, what the fuck is this? You know, I was just like, this is all like, you know, juju, wah, wah. I was like, no. And then I read the book again when I was 30. It's funny when you turn 30 because it's kind of like you're having a pre-midlife crisis, because right. When you turn 30, you're like, shit, I'm not where I thought I would be. I totally thought I would be like so much further down the road, and I'm not. But the beauty in that is that A, it's humbling. B, it kind of immediately sends you into this very focused mind about what you want, the clarity of what you want and what you don't want. And the things that you struggled, paid your dues for, tried, made mistakes, learned from them, hopefully, in your 20s. You take all that when you turn 30. And I think it's such a beautiful sort of crossroads. Often we look at crossroads in a very negative light, but actually the blessings in disguise. And I have my dad to thank. For always telling me that no, crossroads means that you're at a certain stage in your journey, and they come up often, and it is an opportunity to have clarity, and clarity is a gift, and to not be afraid of it. And I read that book, Power of Now, at 30, completely thinking, oh my God, this is amazing. Yes. Yes, it is. You know, all of a sudden I had books like, you know, I could appreciate more the Paulo Coelho books, The Alchemist, or a Khalil Gibran book, The Prophet. I could really appreciate everything that they're saying. I think you have to be at a right place at a right time where you're just ready for it. What do they say? When the student is ready, the teacher appears. And it's so true.
Well, yeah. And I think, you know, and again, this is not, I mean, I don't mean to make a blanket statement about everyone who's like 22 years old, but at least speaking to myself and my friends when I was 22, it's like, I think, you know, you're just, you kind of are like a, at least in your own perception, just sort of like a time millionaire, where it just feels like, oh, it's endless, you know? And then as you start to get older, you're like, oh, yeah, that, God, I had millions of time dollars in here before, and now I have a million. It's still a lot. And then another 10 years, you're like, God, I have like $750,000 time dollar. You know, it's like you're just watching your bank account. And the more that happens, you're like, fuck, I really better start appreciating this because I can see that it's depleting. You know, yeah. Like you feel yourself getting time poorer. And yes. So it's just like important. I think that is also a powerful motivator of like, oh, shit. Yeah, I really better like figure out, and like a lot of the Eckhart Tolle stuff too is just like, you know, knock everything out of the way. What do you have in this exact moment? Oh, okay, well, I feel okay. You know, I feel like I have everything I need in this moment. I'm okay, you know? And that's when you really start to understand, like, oh yeah, all the other shit we pile on, you know, it's like sometimes the past is a bucket of shit and the future is a bucket of piss. And it's just like, but you just want to be in the like either way you're reaching is just gross, you know? you just want to like be in the present bucket where it's like, hey, there's no shit or piss in this one. This one's okay. No. It's dry. And yeah. I think I'm just going to appreciate this for a second. Even just that is helpful.
I'm not going to be able to look at a bucket now in the same way without thinking about you. it's like when I look, if I go down an escalator now at the shopping mall, again, all I think about is, oh, walkers would be brilliant right about now to come up here.
Oh, like, my God. That's already happening. Wherever you go, it's like, okay, yeah, I could break that off. I could stab that zombie in the face.
That's all it is now. If I see vast land, greenery, trees, a beautiful backdrop, I think, wow, this would be a great location to shoot here for, you know, an episode on Fear or something. It's so funny how that all changes.
Dig a moat here, then you could just like, yeah, they couldn't cross there. Yeah. And then you put up a spiky thing there and catch them as they were. Yeah, I know. And even still, I don't feel like I would do that great in an apocalypse. I, you know, even as much as I've...
You know. Oh, heck no. I wave my white flag right away. No, no, I just couldn't do it. So this past weekend, when 702 aired, one of the fans asked on my Instagram takeover of the Fear account, they said, how would you as Karen fare in the apocalypse? And I said, no, Karen wouldn't do well at all, would be waving that white flag. And I know, and it's so funny because when Lenny was asked that question, he said the exact same thing too. I said, well, look at us. I wouldn't want to be with you then in the apocalypse in your life. You're bloody useless.
Yeah, I mean, when you're in drama school, they're not teaching you how to, like, you know, break off the end of a fire extinguisher and, you know, like, stab someone in the face. It's like they're basically training you how to pretend very well.
Exactly.
But not actually how to do stuff.
Exactly. I was learning sword fighting and doing an Irish jig in a period costume film if ever I got costume. Those are the things that I was learning, not apocalyptic, you know.
Oh my God, we've talked so much about so many amazing renovation things, and I've totally, like, you have so many fun things to talk about. First of all, the jump, like going from a show like Once Upon a Time to Fear the Walking Dead, like, must have been such a... I mean, as an actor, it must be a blast because it's like, oh no, this is what acting is. You get to do totally different things, you know, but just the sort of as the working actor part, you know, like those two things, was that a shock?
Oh, it was a big shock to the system. But as actors, we always have to do something that's completely out of our comfort zone. You know, I had done Gallivant, and that was Dan Fogelman's sort of medieval comedy musical with Alan Menken. And to go from that, and I was playing a very feisty princess in that, but I love the whole genre, poking fun at the whole fairy tale genre. So to go from that kind of sort of Princess Bride meets Men in Tights, Monty Python-esque type of thing, comedy, to then, you know, Once Upon a Time, there was this pressure to play this iconic childhood character that we all grew up with. And everyone has their own idea of what Jasmine should and shouldn't be. So it was really important for me to find that balance where I could be proud of a character like Jasmine, portraying her in today's day and age, sort of making her a bit more accessible. And humanizing her, which is what I loved about Once Upon a Time, is placing these Disney iconic characters in everyday situations. So that was really fun. But then I knew after that, I wanted to show that I could do more than being sort of from a comedy feisty princess to then to a Disney iconic character. It was really important for me to really do something completely unexpected and opposite. I don't think anyone was expecting me to go. I think someone actually on my Twitter, someone had posted, what was it? You know, how they were doing and how they're doing now. And they showed a picture of me in like full on regal tiara, beautifully hair, you know, curled hair and my princess gown and everything from Gallivant and Once Upon a Time. And then straight to Grace.
In a nuclear apocalypse, in a zombie apocalypse.
Exactly, with grit and dirt and looking haggard and complete opposite. But it's just so thrilling to be able to play polar opposite or to do something that is completely unexpected. And it's always when you're nervous or scared as an actor of a particular role is when you know you're doing the right thing.
Ooh, so, that's good advice.
You know, so that's when I knew that I'm exactly where I should be. And it was so lovely to see Ian, our showrunner, Ian Goldberg, at my meeting for Fear. I hadn't put two and two together, silly me, that it was the same Ian Goldberg from Once Upon a Time who was in the writer's room there. So when I saw his face, I was so surprised. I was like, Ian? Said, of course you knew. I was like, how did I not put Ian Goldberg with that Ian Goldberg?
Because people in different settings, you're so used to seeing someone in one setting and then they're in another setting, and then you have that moment where you're like, did my brain break? I don't understand what's happening. It's like, no, he just works on this show now.
Yes. And as a showrunner too. And so, and then immediately the first thing he said was, yeah, sorry, there's no magic carpets or tiaras here in this one. I was like, okay.
That would make it so much easier. Oh, God, that would make it so much easier.
Can you imagine? So we had a bit of a laugh and just had a catch up. And then I'll never forget that day. He was telling me about Grace's storyline and then that I would be spending a lot of time with Lenny. And I'd been such a huge fan of Lenny's from before back home in England. And I was just so excited and I was scared, shaking. In fact, I think, you know, in season five, there was the first day on set when I'm holding a gun to Morgan saying, take off your clothes. I was like, you got to decontaminate. You're like, take off your clothes. But I was so excited and nervous, you know, meeting Lenny and Alicia for the first time, because I know how big they are in this universe and how such a big indelible mark they have made so far and continue to make in this universe. So I was really nervous, first day of school nerves. But there was one in particular, the shopping mall episode, 210 words per minute. When we were shooting that scene where Morgan gets back in the truck and he leaves Grace. And I have these weird moments where it just kind of kicks in my brain. My brain wanders and I'm like, oh my God, you're doing this great scene with Lenny James. Like with Lenny James. And then my knees, thank God I was wearing trousers. My knees started shaking a little.
Oh, that's really nice though, because it just shows that you care about what you're doing, you know? Like, that's really nice.
Because sometimes, you know, when you're working with such brilliant actors in this cast, sometimes I forget that I'm in the scene. So like, and I have dialogue with them. So I'll be watching them as if I'm watching a TV screen. And I'm like, oh shit, that's my line. Oops, I'm supposed to say something. It's only because I'm in complete awe of them. And I'm like, wow, you're so good. Okay, I should act.
It's really funny if you're like, oh my God, this fucking guy's talking back to me. I'm watching this show. we're shooting. Ah, I'm sorry.
And then I forget. I'm like, oops, sorry. And Lenny's used to all that sometimes. But I'm like, oh, sorry, I was watching you. Sorry, I'll act.
You were doing such a great job, I gotta say. It was so good.
And he's a fellow Brit, and we're both talking in American accents. So, and Lenny's really good because he sticks to his American accent throughout the whole day. But I will have slip-ups where they'll say action, and all of a sudden I'll forget, and I'll just talk to Lenny as if I'm talking to Lenny. And he'll look at me saying, pretty sure Grace doesn't have a good accent. And I'm like, oh, yeah, sorry, can I do that again?
Surprise reveal.
Yeah. But I'm just so grateful for the experiences that I've had as an actor, you know, on this journey, playing different characters. And I always get asked, oh, what's your favorite role? But you can't, because they're like your babies. Each character has got something different journey-wise than the other. And there's something that you love and maybe not love so much, but it just makes that each experience so Wally unique. So, you know, Grace has certainly kept me on my toes. And for me, it was just so important. I think the blessing of being on lockdown for all those months before we went back to work in season six was being able to have all that time to be the homework girl and to do loads of research and to really delve into researching about infancy loss and postpartum and all of that. So it was just so important. And as hard and painful as it was to watch and listen to these courageous families share their stories and experiences, I knew I needed to watch every single one, as many as I could, so that I could take whatever, like, infuse their stories and their voices into Grace's journey, especially going now into season seven, because we're seeing Grace in the deep throes of her postpartum depression. So I just wanted to get it right. And again, every second scared me so much. I thought, am I doing this right? Am I conveying what she's going through? But when you're surrounded by such an incredibly supportive crew, that just give you constant love and support from behind the lens. And then having Mikey, our director, Michael Satrazimis, directing, it's just, I couldn't have hoped for a more loving and supportive family, which allows myself, you know, to feel comfortable in a safe space to kind of delve into those dark places that I need to go for Grace, and then be able to come up for air in between and have a laugh and a giggle when they say cut. So...
Well,
yeah.
But I also think that's where the theater training is really key, because it teaches you, like, if you just film and television doesn't always condition people to think of everything as an ensemble, but like as a big group effort, because I think, you know, like, it can be easy, I would imagine, to just think about your scene or close ups or, you know, sometimes you're interacting with other people, but, you know, but when your background's in the theater and you. It's like you take on all these different roles and everyone kind of works together to make, and I'm not saying one's necessarily better than the other, but I'm just saying in these types of moments, I always wonder, like, how does an actor know when they've done it right or not? And you just said, like, well, it's the collaboration. It's like, it's having people that you trust who know, like, they're sort of the safety net and they're saying, like, hey, you got it, or maybe you could try this, or, and you trust that they're just there to support you and help you get to the, you know, closer to the truth of whatever the situation is.
It takes a village. It takes a village. Everyone plays their part. And I do love our TV family so much. I'm so appreciative of what they do, because I see it day in and day out. We all do, of how hard they work. And they're there to make us look our best. And they're there to cheer us on. So I was in a happy place, if that makes sense. I was in a safe space. And I just love them. I just adore every one of them. So it's made a huge difference in this season, especially because everyone, you know, off camera, everyone sees me and I'm like, happy Karen and giggly, bubbly, you know, Karen. So to see, I think that's one of the things that I know it might sound weird, but one of the things as an actor that I love about playing Grace is that she's completely in a different space and completely opposite. She's more methodical, factual. And certainly before she opened her heart to Morgan and the rest of the group, she wasn't guided by her emotions as much. And I'm completely different. Like and there's nothing wrong with that. I've learned so much from Grace. There's a lot to learn from her, but you know, I'm very much, all about wearing my heart on my sleeve and being an open book and open heart and all of that. So I'm totally guided by my emotions and my heart. So I've learned a lot from her, and playing her has definitely kept me quite humble.
Well, I think I said this to you when we did the Comic-Con panel, but just about, you know, obviously, you know, these shows are about heartbreaking circumstances, but what Grace went through in the last season and is still going through was just earth-shattering, you know, and I thought you know, your performance was so phenomenal and respectful and to like you are as an audience, you're feeling what Grace is going through. And it's like, when people are faced with all of the worst things, like she's literally dealing with all the worst things and like two apocalypses, like how does someone go on? Like how does someone, and you know, and the characters are doing it. And so it is, on the one hand, the show is about, you know, all of these shows are about the apocalypse, but really at the seed of it, they're about hope and what keeps people going and how do we survive and who do we become in extreme circumstances. And I think that's why this universe resonates with people so much, because it's, you know, I think everyone has some sort of projection of what their apocalypse is or like what they're going through. It's like, how do we survive? And so the show is about survival and just finding that nugget of anything to keep you going one more day.
Yeah. It's those moments where you find the light, where the characters find that light, even if it's for only a fraction of a second, you know, holding on to those moments of joy when you can, appreciating the little things. It's quite magical when you see the moments of light against this grim new reality, especially in this new season.
I know I'm about to run out of time with you because I believe you have there's something else that you have to jump to, or at least this
one. Oh, it's good. I can leave. I have to leave here by 4 o'clock to go pick up hubby from the airport. So.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Oh.
So nice because I'm talking with you guys and then I get to go get him.
how long has he been out of town?
6 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. So what happened with our schedules, I had to leave LA on September 10th. To come back and film Fear. And then he was driving down with our dog Milo. So we crisscrossed because I had to go back to LA to film on something else, which I can tell you, but you can't say it on the podcast. So I had to go back and film in LA. So we crisscrossed and missed each other. And I was like, oh. And then from there, I went to Atlanta to film on something else and then came home. But he was still, it's good that I was busy whilst he was away. But, you know, I love my husband. Being together 24/7 during this pandemic has been has been interesting. I don't think anyone's used to being with each other 24/7. and so, you know, he was getting Zoom fatigue. He's a music producer, songwriter. So he was doing a lot of his sessions on Zoom. But now, because things are opening up and more people are getting vaccinated, it's allowed him to travel. So yeah, he's been away for 6 weeks, and I think it was really good for him. And he was doing what he loves, and he felt like he felt a little bit more normal again. But now I miss him. I'm like, okay, now come home, because I'm like, come home now.
Like a 5 minute break, but now if you could just come home now,
you know. Yeah. Plus, I can't handle a house reno on my own. All these big decisions and stuff. So his timing is perfect. So he's coming back.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny. Like, I cannot make decisions without Lydia. Like, you know, I'll go and check on the renovation and people go, oh, what do you want to do? Should the wood go up and down or should it go horizontal? And I go, oh, let me think about that. Hey, Lydia, so here, and I'm just wondering, like, do we want the wood to go, you know? I mean, I don't even try to hide it. I'm just like, and I'll just say to them sometimes, like, oh, man, that's a Lydia question. I would love to know. That is way a Lydia question, and I am not comfortable making that decision on my own. Yeah. So it's like, I do love the partner aspect of that, too, because it just, I completely trust her, like, if she says something, it's like, oh yeah, that's of course. Like, I don't know why it didn't occur to me, but that you're exactly right, and it makes sense. So I really appreciate that too. I would not want to have to do it on my own.
No, and there were plenty of questions, and I was like, some of them very like way beyond. I'm like, what with electrics and all that? I'm like, I think you should ask Carl about that, and he's going to be back.
God, you never have any fucking idea like how. You just don't normally, in your normal life, you don't think about things like, oh, should the baseboard be 3 inches or 5 inches? Should, you know, it's like, should it have an ornament? fuck, I don't know. Oh, and then you start getting into, well, that ornamentation is really kind of this style, and are we mixing with it? You know, but Lydia's really good at just looking at stuff and going, that one. Like, okay, great, good, done, great, that's perfect. You know what? I don't think about it anymore.
Like at some point, too, like our contractors, they kind of test the waters with you, like boundaries. They want to know what their boundaries are. So, you know, we have some original cabinetry, which is so beautiful, that I want to keep. And so when they're ripping out the floors and everything, he was like, the cabinetry's on top of the floor. So I think we're going to have to, I don't know if this is going to work. I'm like, no, it's going to work. That's going to work. Why? Because, and I talk like this, why? We're going to cut the wood right up until the edge of the cabinetry so we can keep the cabinetry.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
And oh, then, that's what we meant. Yeah, that's, I'm sorry. That's what we meant. Yeah, what we meant was that that's a very easy thing to do.
Because really what they want to do is just demo everything. I'm like, no, 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 no. That's staying. These original cabinetry, which is still looking great and have a lot of character, are staying.
Yeah.
We're going to make this work.
I always think it's really funny. I always kind of make jokes, you know, like when I've lived in LA for so long and I would, you know, like after college, I went to college here and my parents moved out my senior year of high school, and I've lived in a lot of apartments all over the city. And the one sort of consistent thing is like when you move into an apartment, it's like, who painted over the fucking outlets? Like, or like someone just decided, like, I mean, I could pull the cover off, or I could just paint around this little rectangle, but you know what? Fuck these people. And they just lather. It's like, you can't use this outlet. Like, the whole outlet's ruined because someone just thought, I'll just drag a paintbrush over this. Fuck these people. I think sometimes it just boils down to like, they just didn't want to take the extra minute or two. I mean, I don't know if it's more complicated than that, but in that case, it sounds like they knew they could cut up around the thing, but it was just a little extra time and they didn't want to do it. It's like, let's just take the extra time to save the old cabinetry.
Yeah. But I literally told my contractor, and he's wonderful so far. I told him, I said, listen, you know that whole saying, happy wife, happy life? Well, I'm the wife in this house, so you got to keep the wife happy here. So you're not going to take down my cabinet.
Now we're in a renovation marriage.
Yes, exactly.
Listen, the wife isn't angry, but she's getting a little like antsy about this floor conversation. Oh, could you just cut the fucking floor and maybe just save the cabinets?
Yeah. I'm like, they're not coming down. He did that the other day. He goes, oh, I think this hedge wall needs to come down. I'm like, oh, hell no. This hedge wall is staying. Do you know how hard it is to grow a hedge wall like this?
With oh, my God, it takes forever.
I was like, exactly. And I said, that's the whole reason why we bought this house too, because of this beautiful hedge wall. You're not taking it down. And so he said, but I don't know how to get the equipment in. I said, bring a crane in, do what you got to do, but you're not taking down this hedge wall.
Bring a crane, but like put a tunnel system in, burrow in, hire a mole person to dig it out, like bring it up on the other side.
Yeah.
Teleportation device.
I said, you're not knocking down this wall. This is staying.
They'll take years to come back and yeah.
That stuff you just can't, like, it's the backyard's like this haven because it's just all this foliage and greenery and it's so beautiful. And I'm like,
oh, let me pitch you an idea. But we moved into our house. Lydia bought this. Well, she said it was a tree, but it was a twig. And she was like, well, I got on the internet and I laughed so hard at her twig. And she was like, I don't care what you say. I am planting this. This is going to grow into a tree. And I was like, I don't, not in our lifetime. And God damn it, if in the last like 5 or 6 years, that thing hasn't like sprouted to the extent that when we move, we're going to want to dig it out because it's representative of like the tree has mapped our time at this house, the life of this tree. Yeah. So plant a tree or something, like plant a twig and watch it grow. So that you have that as a marker for your house. That's been a fun thing.
I love that. We did that with wisteria because as soon as I told you, the first thing was I want wisteria right in front of the house. And now back home, the wisteria, to get the really thick vines, it takes years and years. But same thing. Planted them, and now it's just like crossing over, taking over, going over.
Oh, yeah, in this climate, it's great. And wisteria is very hard to kill, and it has that really cool look in the winter where it gets twiggy. And then, like, in the spring, it just like, woof, you know?
Yeah, and it's beautiful with all the, especially on the trellis. It feels very, very, it takes me back home where I feel like I'm in the countryside of England. It's just, or Notting Hill, those, you know, those wonderful Instagram pretty photos where they have all the wisteria and the vines on the.
Exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. You think of Notting Hill and the wisteria and then Julia Roberts saying, yes. I'm just a girl standing in front of a boy, yes. asking him to love her. Like that's, it just like that.
That's exactly what I want. You hit it on the nose. That's exactly what I want. That feeling.
Yeah, you want the wisteria and you just picture nearby Hugh Grant is stammering in a sentence somewhere. Picture the whole... The whole scene is set. I love our wisteria. Yeah, are you recording any music still? Or do you record music?
So now that our home studio, Carl had a professional studio built and it was just finished 2 months ago. So he said the minute that was done, we would go back into the studio and finish off my EP.
Fantastic.
I've had such fancy problems in the sense where, you know, my journey with music has been an interesting one because I was full time in songwriting and recording, and I had my record deal in my early 20s after I graduated from drama college. And I was that type of kid because my music education came from my older sister. So whatever she listened to, I was that 4-year-old girl listening to Duran Duran and Aerosmith and singing Hungry Like the Wolf instead of Mary Had a Little Lamb because of my sister's music. And God bless her, I'm really glad. Like, and my parents would make me listen to Motown and take me to concerts every weekend. We'd have free concerts at the local theater where all, you know, I saw Smokey Robinson, The Temptations, The wow. OJs, Kool and the Gang. Like, and I didn't know who they were, but I just loved music so much. So that was really a huge part of my life. And, you know, going into, you know, after drama college, I always thought that if I didn't have a record deal by the time I was 16, because my sister kept telling me about Debbie Gibson and Tiffany and New Kids on the Block, how they were so young having record deals, I thought I'd be an absolute failure. But when I got my record deal, I thought life would be easier, to which my music manager at the time laughed and said, oh no, it's when you get signed, that's when life becomes harder. And I learned a lot from, making the album, going on tour. I was on tour. My first tour was when Alicia Keys had just been signed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Alicia Keys. I was on this tour in Germany with Alicia Keys, Dido.
Oh, my God.
It's so crazy. And I was the baby. Like, Alicia Keys and I were like total babies. And we were comparing acne cream because we were both breaking out in between. It was so funny. And we were so wet behind the ears. And she was just like... as you know, this prodigy and everything. But because we were signed to the same label. So we were on this tour with her and Dido and Sugar Babes, which was this group back from England that were quite big at the time. And we went on tour. And that's when I realized how I've never felt so utterly lonely. It was the first time I ever really felt that, ever. Because when you're a solo artist, it's just you. When you're going to like different places and you don't speak the language, and then you have your press and your team and all that, and they take you everywhere and you're busy, busy during the day with work, and then they drop you off at the hotel at like 8 o'clock, and then you're on your own. You don't know what to do and where to go, and yet you've got to be up early the next day for more press. And I loved it, but I also learned a lot. That was a very lonely experience too. It's much more fun when you have people around you. But I learned so much from being on tour with those amazing artists, and I've had so much fun. And then I had success with my first couple of singles in Europe, and then my record company merged with another one, so BMG merged with Sony, and I lost my whole creative team. And that was the most soul-destroying time for me, because my album then was shelved whilst they were restructuring, and I couldn't really do anything because I almost wish they dropped me, but they didn't. And so I couldn't do anything. I couldn't even write songs because whatever I wrote, they would own.
Right.
So it's funny how life kind of throws these whammies at you. which my dad then told me are Crossroads.
Crossroads.
Yes, Crossroads. And my agent said, well, finally, you're available. I can put you up for auditions and let's get you back working until, you know, we figure out what's going on with your deal. So I asked for a divorce, from them. And it took 2 years to wrangle out of that. But I was so busy with acting. And that's when I booked Scorpion King. And that kind of just changed my whole life and brought me to America. And then I became so busy with acting that the challenge was then trying to find time to go back and do music. Right. So I was releasing EPs for quite some time up until 2013. And as soon as I booked Gallivant, it's just been so, thankfully, I'm so grateful. It's been so busy. So now I've been in the studio in between, especially during the pandemic, having this gift of time. Every time I go into the studio, it's like another sanctuary. You're in a different world. You're in this creative space. And it just felt so good to be back in those old shoes again. And it was really highlighted to me, especially during, you know, filming and singing with Ruben on the show, that I just missed it so much. And so I was writing and doing songs. So now I've recorded half of it and we're going to finish it up. Now.
Oh, that's fantastic. Congratulations. Yes.
Thank you. So I would love to send you a copy and you must tell me what you think.
I would love to hear it. That would be amazing.
Yeah. We're kind of going on a bossa nova pop feel. So I'm excited. And it's getting those muscles out again, you know, and oiling the muscles again. And it just feels good. It's music will always be a part of my life. And I don't have any regrets. I mean, you kind of look back, as Steve Jobs says, and you connect the dots and then it all kind of makes sense to where it's brought me to now. And I wouldn't change it for the world. And I don't want that to sound so cliche, but honestly, I wouldn't change it for the world. And I am where I'm supposed to be. And I'm excited about what's to come. And I think you get better as you get older about embracing the unknown and just letting go and just absolutely trusting that, yeah, everything will fall into place the way it should be.
That is a beautiful, I mean, I would say you stuck the landing on the podcast. That was such a perfect way to kind of wrap it all up. Just perfect. And also, by the way, for some reason in my head, I am hearing the lyrics of Mary Had a Little Lamb to Duran Duran's Hungry Like the Wolf. Mary had a little lamb. I don't know why. He's let it snow. I don't know. It's just in my head now.
You don't understand. It's like when I went to class, I was in kindergarten and, you know, I went to a Catholic school. So me singing I'm on a hunt. I'm after you. It's like... Oh, my parents got the phone call. They're like, we need to talk. You know, your daughter.
Why is Karen singing new wave hits? She should be singing praises to the Lord in a Catholic style.
Oh my gosh, it was so funny because I didn't know when Mary Little had Little Lamb, I was all Humpty Dumpty. I was like, what? I don't know the lyrics to this. But I would then go singing Hungry Like the Wolf or Aerosmith and everything that my sister was listening to. It was the funniest thing.
Listen, all I'm saying is I think you should really strongly consider just you a piano covering a smoldery version of Hungry Like the Wolf. I think it would sound really awesome.
There you go.
That's, you know, those old new wave songs, like when someone, it's like, you know, people do that with Tears for Fears songs all the time. You know, it's like when you really lift out, when you sort of like de-new wave them a little bit, you really see like what beautiful, like what, like really haunting melodies they really have. So I feel like there's something there that you could knock so far out of the park. You know,
yeah, and you guys have heard it here first now, okay?
Now it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Karen. It's so good to see you.
Well, it's so good to see you.
The end.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.